Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Doctor's Kitchen. Recipes, health, lifestyle.
We tend to kind of look at those different debates and conversations and say, hey, listen, we can join the dots up here. You know, there's a study from New York showing that people on the Mediterranean diet actually had larger brain volumes. Larger brain wow. sizes in their 80s who were on the Mediterranean diet. You know, there's a study from, study about these polyphenols. Then there's also the Predimen study. And hey, hang on a minute. Let's bring this all together and start to get a message out there that there's something going on that our patients and the public really need to do. And then if we can communicate it in a really enjoyable way, like you do in the kitchen, even better, because then that connects and helps people to understand how to make it work for them.
Welcome to the Doctor's Kitchen podcast. The show about food, lifestyle, medicine, and how to improve your health today. I'm Dr. Rupi, your host. I'm a medical doctor, I study nutrition, and I'm a firm believer in the power of food and lifestyle as medicine. Join me and my expert guests where we discuss the multiple determinants of what allows you to lead your best life. Over the years, you'll have heard me frequently talking about the Mediterranean way of eating and extra virgin olive oil. And today on the show, I'm delighted to be joined by an expert in all things to do with olive oil and the history of a Mediterranean diet in general, Dr. Simon Poole. Everything you need to know about olive oil is in today's episodes. Its origins, its therapeutic effects, the impact on heart and brain health, its potential anti-cancer and weight maintenance effects, as well as the alchemy of olive oil and food. Today's podcast was absolutely fascinating. For me, I learned so much from Dr. Poole, who is a Cambridge-based GP and an internationally renowned authority on the science and application of the Mediterranean diet and lifestyle. He's also co-author of the Gourmand Prize-winning book, The Olive Oil Diet, and speaks regularly on the subject of communication and change management in population and individual nutritional health. On the podcast, you'll learn about what the origins of olive oil are, how the oil is produced, its regenerative impact on soil and climate health, the types of phenols in olive oil, olive and heart health, as well as Alzheimer's, weight loss, and also the grading process of olive oil and what to look for, plus the smoking point of olive oil, something I'm asked about a lot. Enjoy today's episode. I'm sure you'll find it fascinating. Simon, thank you so much for making the time this morning. I know you're a busy GP in Cambridge, so it's fantastic to be able to talk to someone who loves olive oil, probably more than me, I would say, and I didn't think that was possible.
That's an absolute pleasure, Rupi. Yes, that's an absolute pleasure.
So I want to dive down into this because you are a practicing general practitioner. What piqued your interest in nutrition and diet in general? Because from now it's become quite trendy, I guess, to be a lifestyle GP or someone who's interested in lifestyle medicine. But you've been
bestowing the virtues of the Mediterranean diet and olive oil for a number of years now. So where was your beginnings in this journey?
Yeah, well, that's a really good question. I mean, it began really for me, gosh, about 15 to 20 years ago. My general practice career spans 30 years, nearly. And it began about 15, 20 years ago when I just started to see some research papers coming out in the British Medical Journal, in New England Journal of Medicine, and really prestigious journals, showing the power of the Mediterranean diet. And actually, there were some comparisons of the Mediterranean diet with, for example, medications for pre-existing heart disease, and really demonstrating just the power of lifestyle, and in particular, the evidence, which I think is now overwhelming and compelling, about the benefits of the Mediterranean diet. And you're right that increasingly, thankfully, GPs, doctors like yourself, are becoming interested in lifestyle medicine. And for me, the Mediterranean diet is not a fashion. It's absolutely been, well, it's been around there for millennia. I mean, it started with the cultivation of the olive tree amongst agriculture in the fertile crescent 3,000, 10,000 years ago, a long time ago. So I became interested and I started to advocate it to my patients. And, although, of course, this is anecdotal, they came back with better numbers. They came back with better blood pressure. They were losing weight. They were feeling better on the Mediterranean diet. And, of course, that's mirrored by much of the research. And then I just started digging deeper and really beginning to understand a little bit more about, in particular, the role of extra virgin olive oil at the heart of the Mediterranean diet. And so I just started to speak to my patients, and they said, well, look, we need a little bit more time. So can you come to the library at 6 o'clock or the village hall? And so I kind of cut my teeth on Women's Institute and Rotary Club talks in the villages. And since then have been presenting and talking, and now I'm very privileged to talk in international conferences about how we communicate the Mediterranean diet to patients.
Yeah, that's amazing. I mean, it's incredible how many times I hear stories that mirror that from other GPs and practicing doctors who started having more open, honest conversations with patients and then found themselves running late in clinic. I remember I used to find myself running really late in clinic as a trainee general practitioner back in 2012, and I got known as the doctor that would talk to the patients about diet. And all of a sudden you get all these inquiries from random patients and patients from other GPs and stuff. So it's brilliant. And you mentioned international conferences there. You're part of something, well, not only a council member of the Royal College of GPs, but you're part of an initiative called the True Health Initiative. I wonder if you could talk a bit about that.
Yeah, so the True Health Initiative is an international collaboration of medics, but also chefs, dietitians, other people involved, particularly in the public around the communication of lifestyle medicine. So it's based in the States, and I was invited really at its inception to be part of that group following a conference I attended at Boston where we tried to bring lots of different nutritional tribe doctors together, the person who'd written the first book on the paleo diet and Walter Willett from Harvard, who's very much of the sort of low saturated fat mantra. And we tried to get everybody together to agree some basic principles that we could all sign up to around nutrition, because of course there are quite a lot of food fights that go on amongst doctors and experts, which is something I think that needs to be leveled out so that we can communicate much more clearly to patients. So it's about communication, and the THI, the True Health Initiative, is about trying to get those messages out about real food, about eating well, about looking after yourself, and really very much aligned to the work that you do, which is so influential, and which I think really helps and supports people, because we know that 70% of chronic diseases are potentially preventable through lifestyle measures, and with that kind of promise of lifestyle interventions like diet and other aspects to a healthy lifestyle, we know it's so important.
Yeah, I that really does resonate with me. It reminds me of the TED talk that I recently gave in November 2019 in Bristol, all about how when you look at all the different diets there, whether you choose paleo or vegan, Mediterranean, you know, and Mediterranean is not really a diet, and I think we'll go into that in a bit more. But the underlying principles are very similar. It's removing a lot of the processed, high sugar, high energy items and introducing whole foods, real food, cooking from scratch, going a lot slower. And I remember it reminds me of the study that was conducted by, I think it was Professor Gardner at Stanford, the A to Z study, which followed people on a chosen diet over 12 months, whether it be a low saturated fat or low fat in general, or Mediterranean. I think they had a vegan arm as well. And all the results were the same at 12 months. And the best predictors of whether a person was going to lose weight, which is the primary endpoint, was how likely they were to stick to the diet. So it really goes down to individualizing and personalizing what people preference, and actually, you know, encouraging them to stick with a way of living, a way of eating that works for them.
I think you're right, and I think that's why some of the very highly restrictive diets and some of the more, let me politely say, unusual diets are not sustainable for people. And what people really need is advice about real food, about enjoying food, about celebrating food. And then actually, I think a lot of it falls into place then around people getting an understanding and a taste for what it means to eat proper real food. But the Mediterranean diet, I would contend, supercharges that. I think there are some elements of the Mediterranean diet which are really quite special. It starts on the principles of real food, very clearly. But there are some, for example, food combinations which give it a particularly powerful effect, it seems. So the Mediterranean diet is, of course, my tribe. But I think it's very interesting, because if I talk to all the various pugilists, the fighters in the food fights, in the macro, what I call the macronutrients wars, you know, the yeah, low carb, the low fat. If you talk to all of them, at the end of the day, they all kind of agree that the Mediterranean diet is actually a very good diet. And, oh yes, well, my low-carb version of the Mediterranean diet looks like this. Or my low-fat diet version of the diet looks like this, but it's all around the Mediterranean. Or 800 calories a day on day one or two of fast. Oh, and then when we eat, let's eat Mediterranean. So I think it is quite a common theme on people. And that's because essentially the evidence is so overwhelming, really, gathered really since Ansel Keys started that process of gathering that evidence when he observed the healthy lifestyles and the longevity of people living in Crete and in Calabria in southern Italy.
Yeah, I mean, I love the way you describe the Mediterranean diet as more of a lifestyle rather than just the plates of food, because it really does go to the food combinations, but also the way you eat the food, who you eat the food with, and the sort of other activities that are actually quite socially cohesive. They're quite encouraging of play and communication outside of just what you put on your plate.
You're absolutely right. And there are a number of themes within that. So there are themes around if you eat more slowly, you tend to eat overall fewer calories. If you celebrate food and value it, then you waste less food. It's a more sustainable diet. There's a sort of conviviality around eating together, which again has an effect on your metabolism, on actually the way you process your food. And if you look at the so-called blue zones, which you may have covered in some of your podcasts and referred to, you know, these are areas where they have particularly a particular numbers of centenarians, number of people in their 90s or who reach 100. And really, there are some very common themes around diet and lifestyle, but also around community and around sharing, which are also really, really important. And about understanding and respecting food and the environment around us, which I think is good not just for our lifestyle, but it's good for our planet and therefore good for health, because anything that's good for the planet has to be good for health in the long term.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think, you know, anything that supercharges those sort of values of sustainability and circular food systems is definitely a win. You mentioned, you know, how long olive oil has been around and references to it as well, of thousands of years. I thought we could start by just going into what is olive oil, how it's produced and where its sort of origins are.
Sure. So essentially, if I could just put that into context, because the Mediterranean diet is a many regional diets around the Mediterranean. So you can take a Mediterranean diet from Italy or from Spain or from North Africa, and they will all have distinct difference. Some will have alcohol, wine with them. Others, for religious observance reasons, they won't have alcohol or wine. Some will have a lot of garlic, the French, and so on. If you look at the common denominator of all those regional Mediterranean diets, there are herbs and spices, there are plentiful colored vegetables and fruits, there are whole grains, there are nuts and seeds, and meat eaten relatively less often. But the common denominator really is the combination of vegetables and extra virgin olive oil. That's what, and the Mediterranean diet can actually be defined really as being the Mediterranean itself, which is where the olive tree grows. And where the olive tree ceases to grow, ceases to become a Mediterranean region. And the olive tree itself was first cultivated, as I've said, many thousands of years ago in what is now modern-day Syria, Iran. And then because the oil from the fruit of the tree was so valuable for food, but also when it was not edible for fuel, for lamps, the Phoenicians spread the olive tree with their trading routes across the Mediterranean from modern-day Lebanon to North Africa and to Spain and Greece and Italy, and planted the olive tree. And it's, of course, become very much central to the diet. And so olive oil is fundamental at the heart. And essentially it's processed. It's the fresh fruit juice of the olive. So it's distinct from other seed oils or vegetable oils because it's actually a fresh fruit juice. So it's quite expensive to produce, which is why you've got to understand that you've got to pay a little bit more for a decent extra virgin olive oil, because there's a lot that goes into it. It's not an industrial process for good extra virgin olive oil. We can talk about refined olive oil if you want, but that's essentially a processed product. What is really key for health is extra virgin olive oil. And this is from the pressing of the olives to extract the juice under conditions which minimize degradation, which minimize breakdown, which minimize oxygen, heat, and light. So a good olive farmer will nurture his trees through the winter, through the first winter, and then into the spring and summer, and then in the autumn we'll harvest, we'll press the olives as quickly as possible following harvesting, and extract the oil and put it in very large stainless steel containers with nitrogen sealing to keep those keep the dangers of oxygen, light, and heat away from extra virgin olive oil, which will give its freshness, it'll give its fantastic taste, and it'll also preserve the all-important polyphenol antioxidants, which are broken down if it's exposed to air and heat and light. And then when you get your final extra virgin olive oil, probably in a tin or in your darkened bottle, stored in a cool place, again, to preserve it. They have a very long shelf life, extra virgin olive oil, but it is best preserved away from the effects of light and heat and oxygen. Then you'll get your really super tasty extra virgin olive oil, which will have a fruitiness. Perhaps you'll taste fresh grass in it. But you will also, interestingly, get a little bit of bitterness and a little bit of pungency. And what's really interesting is that pepperiness and the bitterness actually reflect the level of polyphenol antioxidants in the oil. So those are really good for health. So we can talk about extra virgin olive oil in the context of these polyphenol antioxidants, but essentially you can recognize them by tasting an oil that's fruity, but there's also got this bitterness and the pungency, the pepperiness. What makes you actually cough when you just have extra virgin olive oil by itself, which are positive attributes which denote a really healthy oil.
The way you're describing that, I can almost feel in the back of my mouth what I taste whenever I try an olive oil for the first time, a good quality one anyway. And before we go into the antioxidants, the polyphenols, which I find the most fascinating attributes of olive oil, you touched on provenance there and where the olive tree originated. Now we have olive oil farmers that have extended throughout the Mediterranean region, but you also get some globally as well. Are there significant differences in those different types of olive trees? Do you find that it has to be one of those products where you have to get it from certain Mediterranean regions to have a true olive oil experience?
No, there are some really great olive oils being produced from all over the world. And I think that's really exciting because one of the things about the Mediterranean diet, and in particular the olive tree, is that it's an extremely a sustainable product. So for example, the production of 1 liter of extra virgin olive oil sinks 10 kilograms of carbon. It gives back to the planet. It can be grown in places that other crops can't be grown because it responds really well to harsh and arid conditions. And so the expansion of the Mediterranean diet production areas to Australia, so the southern hemisphere like South Africa, Australia, Chile is a great producer now, as well as the northern hemisphere, which includes our Mediterranean region, but also California in particular. And so across the 40-degree parallel north and south, the olive tree will thrive and flourish. And of course, we've always seen the evolution. I mean, the Mediterranean diet has evolved over millennia with the introduction of the tomato from the States, with the introduction of the pomegranate and indeed garlic from Asia, from the Indian subcontinent. And so this evolution of the Mediterranean diet, and we're just part of that bringing it to other parts of the world, which I think is great because we can then access local sustainable products in terms of actually helping and supporting the planet, because it's such an important health-giving oil, and frankly, it's the only liquid fat. I mean, I don't have butter in my house. I'll just have extra virgin olive oil, and it's so good for you. I think there's great promise that we can, well, I say we, the producers can supply the world with increasing quantities of this fantastic product.
Yeah, the fact that it's almost a regenerative plant and it's a carbon sink is super exciting. But I love the way that you're nodding the other elements of a Mediterranean diet, of what we think is classical Mediterranean, but actually has its roots in Asia and different continents around the world. The spice root, especially, we think of saffron or pepper, paprika. These are all come from different areas as a result of colonization. So it's very, very interesting history.
Exactly, and the history is fascinating because of course people knew about health. In ancient times, I mean, we might be able to explain it a little better with science now, and we can tell a story about why the polyphenols make you cough, which is a science-based story. But actually, people in the past have really understood the benefits of health. So there was a Greek physician back in the second century AD, I think, called Dioscorides, who used to recommend the early harvest bitterest juice of the extra virgin olive oil for various inflammatory conditions. And we now know, and we can now understand, that actually that is the highest antioxidant and anti-inflammatory olive oil. So maybe Dioscorides knew something, a thing or two. And Hippocrates would recommend, he had 60 recipes which were founded on extra virgin olive oil for conditions which were largely inflammatory conditions. And with the anti-inflammatories we now understand to be in the oil, it's a fascinating history, I think, of physicians and doctors. I mean, clearly, we didn't always get it right over the years with bleeding people. And although leeches, I think, are back in fashion, aren't they, medically? But we didn't always get it right. But, there were themes around food and nutrition, which are really interesting around people always wanting to try to understand the health benefits of things like saffron, as you say.
Absolutely, yeah. I didn't know that about, is it Saccharides?
Dioscorides.
Dioscorides. I'm definitely going to look that up. And the recipes as well. Do we actually have the original recipes that Hippocrates wrote?
We don't have them in great detail, largely, because they were written after his death. But but there was a sort of celebrity chef of his time. There was a Roman celebrity chef who by all accounts sounds to have been quite a challenging character, perhaps not dissimilar to some of the celebrity chefs we know today, called Marcus Apicius, who again would talk. He wrote cookbooks which again lots of extra virgin olive oil in them, and talking about the importance for health, and those cookery books were used up until the Middle Ages. So we do have some written stories, which I think are just fascinating.
Incredible. Yeah, absolutely fascinating. It's really putting a smile on my face, the sort of imagination of Hippocrates, a doctor, dealing with a chef, and you know the sort of arguments they might have as well about the amounts of olive oil and the flavor and all the rest of it. It's brilliant. Not too dissimilar from my chefs in culinary medicine, actually, which is the nonprofit we've started to teach medics the foundation of nutrition and how to cook. Let's dive deeper into the polyphenols in olive oil now, because I think perhaps we should start by describing exactly what we mean by polyphenols, where they come from, and why that a good olive oil has that sort of bitterness, that pepperiness that catches the back of your throat and makes you cough, as you said.
Yeah, sure. So polyphenols are plant compounds. So these are chemicals that are produced generally in the outer skin of plants and fruits to protect the plant from external challenges. So from microbial attack, so from infections, fungal infections or whatever, including also oxidative stress, including oxygen, because we know that oxygen is clearly a very reactive atom, and that's why we use it to live. You know, that's why its chemistry is highly reactive, and that's why we get life from oxygen. But oxygen at the same time, because it's so highly reactive, can actually damage other molecules, particularly in its most reactive form, which we call free radicals. So because of that, fruits need to protect themselves from oxygen in the environment, which has a tendency to oxidize them. So you can see that in an apple, for example. If you cut open an apple and you expose it to the air, what happens? It turns brown. Its flesh turns brown. There are lots of polyphenol antioxidants on the outside of the apple, which are protecting the apple from the oxygen. So polyphenols are really important to a plant. And in fact, the olive tree produces them in abundance because it exists in a very harsh and arid environment. And actually, if you stress an olive tree, and I'm not saying that you should tell it to do an extra shift in A&E, but if you stress an olive tree by not over-irrigating it, or perhaps growing it at altitude, it will, or growing it organically, it will increase the amount of polyphenols to protect the olive fruit from the greater challenges of the environment. So to protect it from oxidation, from oxygen, from heat and light and all this chemistry that goes on that it needs to resist to maintain a stable olive and its contents. So polyphenols are produced by the plant to support it and to prevent those oxidation reactions. Now, when you produce the olive oil, hopefully you can produce a great olive oil that is full of these antioxidants. And then when we consume the extra virgin olive oil, and indeed when we consume other fruit, we're getting these polyphenols. We're getting these antioxidant compounds into our bodies. And that protects us from free radicals circulating around in our system. Now, it's a little bit more complicated than that, in fact. And you know, there's a lot of hype around antioxidants, and there are antioxidant supplements for which, incidentally, there's no evidence of benefit. And there is a lot of hype because people don't quite understand about the way antioxidants work when they get to the body, how they're altered by the gut microbiome. It's actually very difficult to see antioxidants working on free radicals actually at a physiological level. You can see it in a test tube in vitro, but in vivo, it's much more difficult to measure. You can certainly see these polyphenols coming out in your urine and going into your body, but it is really difficult to kind of describe this antioxidant effect. So it may be that it has a powerful antioxidant effect in cells that we're just not witnessing. It may be that it's some of the metabolites from the gut microbiome that actually are more powerful. It may be that actually small quantities of these antioxidants that do get into our system work synergistically and recharge themselves to prevent these oxidation reactions and to kind of resolve these free radicals that are around in our system. But we know what we call oxidative stress, which is this pressure on our bodies from free radicals, is reduced if we consume a high polyphenol diet. And that's lots of colored fruit and vegetables, because plants are very smart, so they produce polyphenols with colors, so they can use them to signal to animals and so on. They also produce polyphenols that are quite bitter, because at certain stages of the fruit's development, they don't want them eaten quite yet. And so those bitter polyphenols will then gradually subside as the fruit's ready to be eaten by a passing mammal. So there's a really fascinating interaction between the nature of polyphenols from plants, and the way in which they work through our gut microbiome, but actually then on an intracellular level, and how they reduce that oxidative stress, reduce those unwanted extra reactions from uncontrolled oxygen free radicals in our bodies. And so they have this antioxidant effect, which in turn, because oxidation is part of inflammation, actually has an anti-inflammatory effect. And so that's crucial about polyphenols and the way in which they probably help and support our health. And then I can tell you about the cough if you want to. Are you interested in the cough story, Rupi?
I'm very interested in the cough story.
That was a bit of a leading question. Who's doing this interview? Well, okay. So the cough story is fascinating, because the ability of polyphenols to make a bitter taste and also to make you cough is something that was discovered by a scientist called Gary Beauchamp, who was a professor in Monell Institute in Philadelphia. And the reason why he discovered a particular compound that makes you cough in extra virgin olive oil is because he was researching a cough medicine that was produced by one of the big pharmaceutical companies. And he was asked to identify what it was in that cough medicine that was making people rather paradoxically cough. So people were having this cough medicine, and it was supposed to help them cough, and it was making them cough. And so the pharmaceutical company went to him and said, look, you know, which of the ingredients is making a cough? So he isolated it, and he discovered that actually ibuprofen was the compound in the cough mixture that was making you cough. And I don't know whether you've ever accidentally bitten on one of these liquid capsule ibuprofens, Rupi, but it makes you cough.
I haven't actually.
Don't try it. It makes you cough. Quite unpleasant. So the pharmaceutical company said, thank you very much. And they resolved that, and they reduced the level of ibuprofen in the cough medicine. And then Gary went out for a conference. I think it was in Italy. And of course, the first thing you do when you go to a conference in Italy is go out for lunch, because the Mediterranean lifestyle, that's what it's all about. And so he went out to lunch and was introduced to some extra virgin olive oil. And his host said, you know, this is a fantastic local extra virgin olive oil. You must taste it. And so Gary kind of got his piece of bread to dip in. And he said, no. You just take it. Just sip it. So he sipped it. And he started to cough. So he thought, gosh, there is something in this that is similar to that. To the ibuprofen. So he took it back, and his Italian hosts then sent him away saying, ah, yes, well, this is a really good extra virgin olive oil, because it's a three cough extra virgin olive oil. We have a one cough, two cough, three coughs. This is a three cough, early harvest, lots of antioxidants. So he went back to Monell, and he did some research, and he discovered a new compound called oleocanthal. Oleo meaning oil, and canthal meaning sting. Because it stings the back of your throat. And he discovered that, like ibuprofen, it inhibits inflammation on the COX-2 pathway. And when you think about it, you know, you and I, when we see patients who've had heart attacks, or we sometimes give them aspirin. We sometimes give them a little bit of anti-inflammatory medication. And of course, Possibly. I think it's something like you have to consume something like 50 mils of extra virgin olive oil to get the equivalent of 25 milligrams of ibuprofen. So it's a small equivalent dose. But a small dose of anti-inflammatory, with an anti-inflammatory effect each day, may well be part of the reason why extra virgin olive oil is associated with reduced risks of heart disease, stroke, sometimes of cancer, because of its anti-inflammatory effect. So oleocanthal may well be one of the, they've identified 36 polyphenols so far in extra virgin olive oil, but maybe one of those that helps and supports an anti-inflammatory effect. And we know that many chronic diseases are driven by chronic uncontrolled inflammation, often through oxidative stress, which is what we were talking about before. And the oleocanthal contributes probably to that anti-inflammatory action.
Honestly, that I've just been listening to the story with a big smile on my face the whole time, because it's brilliant. It's absolutely fascinating, because you hear about all these different phenols and phenolic acids, and oleocanthal is one of them. There's also, you know, biphenyls and phytosterols, and how they might have this particular effect in vitro. But to hear it come to life in a personable story like that is just brilliant. And I don't think anyone's going to forget that story of oleocanthals and the three costs. It's brilliant. Absolutely fascinating. And to superimpose that onto the types of medications that we use that are evidence-based, like having regular aspirin as a potential anti-carcinogenic pharmaceutical to prevent bowel cancers, something that we use as a cardioprotective pharmaceutical as well over long periods of time, it kind of adds weight to the idea that a Mediterranean diet supplemented with extra virgin olive oil can potentially have these impacts over the long term preventative measures. It's absolutely fascinating.
Exactly. And there was a large study called the PREDIMED study, which I'm sure you're familiar with, where they looked at the Mediterranean diet with additional extra virgin olive oil and showed reductions in heart disease, in stroke, in sometimes of cancer, including breast cancer, as much as 60% reduced risk in comparison with the control group who had what we call the SAD diet. Which is the standard American diet. That's what that stands for. Actually, they had an American Heart Association diet. That's right. So actually, they had a good diet versus the Mediterranean diet. And the Mediterranean diet was so superior, they actually had to stop the study before it was due to be concluded and transfer the people who were on the American Heart Association diet, the low-fat diet, onto the Mediterranean diet, because the benefits were so very clear. And because we're now understanding, I think, that so many diseases are based on inflammation. I mean, even Alzheimer's, even the drivers of Alzheimer's probably have some inflammatory element, and possibly some oxidative stress is involved. And there's a very interesting study that's just come out of the University of Athens, where they fed people with early stage dementia, with some cognitive challenges. They fed them high polyphenol extra virgin olive oil, and then they fed a controlled group with low polyphenol extra virgin olive oil. And there was actually a difference in the outcome, so that the people who were on this high polyphenol, slightly bitter, pungent oil, really high quality, really good oil, actually had much better preserved levels of functioning a year or two into the study, which shows potential for the possibility that diet and perhaps extra virgin olive oil, the Mediterranean diet, might be really key in reducing the risk or reducing the progression of even conditions like Alzheimer's disease. So we're really in a very exciting phase, I think, with understanding. But of course, you know, when we talk about the Mediterranean diet supplemented with extra virgin olive oil, I think in some respects that's a misnomer, because actually Mediterranean diet is absolutely at the heart of the Mediterranean diet. And it's such an enjoyable food, and it's such a great tasting food, because some producers are now trying to produce small medicinal size bottles of this really hyper, super polyphenol level oils, which are really bitter and taken as a medicine. But for me, I just love extra virgin olive oil as part of my diet. And you mentioned the smoke point earlier, and do you have a lot of you probably like me have a lot of questions about the smoke point from people.
Absolutely, all the time. Whenever I'm using extra virgin olive oil, which is my go-to oil, and everyone knows that, and I pour it into a pan on low to medium heat, I always get asked that question. Just before we go into the smoking point, though, because I'm really glad you brought up those two things, the Predibent study, even with its revisions, of which they were quite recent, you know, it still demonstrated that massive reduction across the 7,000 cohorts, I believe it was. So that really made a lot of my colleagues kind of sit up and take diet very seriously, particularly extra virgin olive oil. But also, what I regard as the disease of our time at the moment, Alzheimer's, neurodegenerative disease, something that is a growing epidemic and not a lot of people realize this. And the fact that there was that recent study looking at Mediterranean or extra virgin olive oil and slowing the progression of early stage cognitive impairment, that for me is absolutely fascinating. And I wonder if there are any other elements of that study, I don't know if you've looked at it in detail, that could add weight as to why we saw that. And inflammation is almost like the underlying paradigm of a lot of chronic diseases that we see as GPs in practice.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right. And I think there is probably it's believed that oxidative stress plays a part in the formation of the neurofibrillary tangles in Alzheimer's disease. So anything that reduces oxidative stress, anything that reduces inflammation, has the potential to benefit in terms of the development of Alzheimer's disease. And again, you see very low levels of Alzheimer's disease on people who are taking the traditional Mediterranean diet. So lifestyle does seem to be really key. And whilst whilst there are lots of very valiant efforts to produce medications, we've seen them fail so many times on to deliver on the early promise. And so I think you're absolutely right with this increasing rates of Alzheimer's disease. It's so important to kind of get across that lifestyle really does count as a preventative, potentially preventative factor. And there are lots of little small studies which kind of, because one of the things that I think that those of us interested in lifestyle medicine really enjoy doing is we may not be experts in one particular field, but what we can develop is an interest in looking at lots of different little studies, which all sum up to be something that we can deliver as a message to our patients. And you know, I have very many scientific friends who are absolutely, you know, at the forefront, leading edge of one particular element, of one particular aspect of the science of the Mediterranean diet, one polyphenol, you know. And I have conversations with them, and they go to a conference with their colleagues, and they debate about their scientific methods, and they debate about whether or not, you know, how much of this polyphenol was broken down by the gut and so on. And you and I and those people interested in lifestyle medicine, we tend to kind of look at those different debates and conversations and say, hey, listen, we can join the dots up here. You know, there's a study from New York showing that people on the Mediterranean diet actually had larger brain volumes, larger brain sizes in their 80s who were on the Mediterranean diet. You know, there's a study from, a study about these polyphenols. Then there's also the Predimen study. And hey, hang on a minute. Let's bring this all together and start to get a message out there that there's something going on that our patients and the public really need to do. And then if we can communicate it in a really enjoyable way, like you do in the kitchen, even better, because then that connects and helps people to understand how to make it work for them.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think it's one of the many privileges of being a general practitioner, where we get that bird's eye view and we get that sort of realism when we look at the scientific journals as to, okay, how do I translate this into a meaningful action and a meaningful message to someone sat in front of me in clinic? or even other colleagues as well, and trying to encourage them to sort of take a lifestyle approach to their patients. You know, it's one of the bugbears of mine when I go to these conferences and you just hear endless debate. And it's great to have that scientific skepticism, but sometimes I think we also need to dose that appropriately with some pragmatism in practice as well.
Yeah, I think that's right. And whilst I used to say, when I used to go to the, was invited to these conferences to speak, I said, well, look, I'm just a GP. I'm just a family physician. Yeah. Whilst I absolutely recognise, and I think it's really important for those of us who are trying to deliver these messages, I think it's really important that we do recognise the limitations of our expertise and of what we know. And I think it's important that we deliver really robust, evidence-based medicine. And so I think we should not overreach, and we should not pretend that we do research ourselves or anything like that. But I think, on the other hand, it's really so key and so important to get those messages out there. So I tease my scientific colleagues who I witness exactly like you do, debating over the niceties of a particular methodology in one of their science. I say, look, forget the methodology. This is really great stuff. Let's try and, I mean, okay, we don't know it all. And again, we have to, you know, we can't say for certain. You know, I've said maybe quite a few times in this podcast, as I always do, there's some early evidence that this is helpful, but let's get it out there, because we certainly know that we're not doing anything wrong if we're telling people to eat real food, unprocessed, and to enjoy it.
Yeah, absolutely. And one other thing I wanted to touch on, actually, before we go into the smoking point, which I can imagine all the listeners are like, get to the smoking point. I want to know about the smoking point stuff. Weight loss. I was really interested in the impact of olive oil on weight loss, maybe even satiety. Could we go into that? Because I don't think I've come across that before.
Yes, absolutely. So the Mediterranean diet is very much associated with a normal weight. So it's associated with a healthy weight. Now, in fact, it's very interesting, because there was some research done recently which showed that if you compare somebody who's of normal weight with a Western diet with somebody who is actually overweight with a high BMI, not obese, but a high BMI, who's on the Mediterranean diet, the survival of that person who's got a higher BMI but's on the Mediterranean diet is better than a person on a poor diet with a normal BMI, which is really fascinating. So actually, I mean, I think we're learning to rethink a little bit about BMI anyway, because we know that it's not, you know, it doesn't reflect, it doesn't exactly reflect health. I mean, you know, actually, you have a higher survival rate if you are slightly in the overweight range, if you're in your 70s, probably because you have a little bit more lean muscle weight. So BMI is more complicated. And I'm a rugby fan, and whenever I watch my favorite Welsh, because I'm Welsh rugby players running around the pitch with their massive BMIs, I think, well, these guys are pretty fit, so BMI can't mean that. So when we're talking about BMI, we've got to be I think a little bit cautious around that as well. But clearly, weight is important, and clearly, obesity, being overweight with insulin resistance, and with in a hyperglycemic state, is, guess what? It's a pro-inflammatory state. So. The high sugar levels we have, the insulin resistance, being overweight is a core state which promotes inflammation. And if you look at inflammatory markers, and as you know, we can measure inflammatory markers in the blood test, we can measure chemicals which denote how much background inflammation is going on in people. People who are overweight or obese often have high levels of inflammatory markers. And the Mediterranean diet will bring people's weight gently and steadily back into a normal range, as long as people are aware, not necessarily to calorie count, but to portion size, to have an approach to portion size and to the speed at which we're consuming. If we consume a TV dinner, we consume it more quickly, we're less satisfied, we get those 20-minute feedback from the stomach that we're full. we don't get that because we're watching TV and we're eating more quickly. And science has shown that we eat more quickly when we're having a TV dinner. And so we will eat more, and so we'll consume more food. So the Mediterranean diet is good in terms of its lifestyle at increasing satiety, and olive oil is part of that. So extra virgin olive oil will increase your satiety. In fact, there's a chemical, a hexanol, which is a chemical, an aromatic chemical that you can smell. So the fresh grass, and it's been shown that even if you just smell extra virgin olive oil before a meal, and then you have a meal, you will consume less just because you smelt the olive oil in advance of the meal, which is, I just love that. Love that bit of science.
So that's brilliant.
So yes. And it does increase your satiety. And the thing that I'm really discovering now through looking at all the research papers is a whole new field around diet, which I view, which is, I mean, there are advances on diet in terms of epigenetics, how diet can affect our genes and the expression of our genes, and how diet, in particular the Mediterranean diet, can suppress cancer genes, for example, switch them off. There's some fascinating research about the gut microbiome, of course. But one other area which I think is really fascinating is food interactions. And I promise I'll get around to your answering your question. But the way we put food together is just so interesting. And extra virgin olive oil is part of that story. So if you have a carbohydrate meal, a meal with carbohydrates in it, and you dose it with a little fat, a little extra virgin olive oil, you slow the absorption of the sugar from those carbohydrates. So it, in effect, decreases the glycemic load of the meal. Now, and that is true of extra fat. It's actually true of any fat. So although you wouldn't really, I mean, I don't have a problem with butter as a single ingredient, but I am a keen, but you know, if you put butter on your jacket potato, it will decrease the glycemic load of that jacket potato meal. If you go to Italy, you wouldn't dream of eating pasta without a drizzle of extra virgin olive oil. And there's a reason for it. Not only that it tastes fantastic with a drizzle of extra virgin olive oil, but it actually suppresses the spike, those really quick spikes in sugar, in glucose, that ultimately lead to insulin resistance and weight gain and potentially type 2 diabetes. And at the same time, extra virgin olive oil has got some individual polyphenols which appear to increase insulin sensitivity, which again is part of the story about why we put on weight. So it not only suppresses the glycemic load of a meal, but extra virgin olive oil also seems to switch on some insulin sensitivity, some increased insulin sensitivity, which makes us more efficient at dispatching that sugar from the carbohydrate. So it's about those interactions, and that's one of the reasons why probably the Mediterranean diet works to reduce weight.
There's just so many different mechanisms as to why this kind of diet is so healthy for us. You know, there's the polyphenol argument, the antioxidant argument, now the glycemic load, something that I haven't come across before, the impact on insulin sensitivity, you know, all these different drivers of weight gain are mitigated with the use of high polyphenol ingredients and olive oil being one of them. The fat combination I haven't come across, but going back to sort of like my own origins and my parents and stuff and Ayurvedic medicine, it is a lot to do with food combinations. And I must admit, I'm not an expert in Ayurvedic medicine or Ayurvedic food, but just the combinations of food that they recommend are very much rooted in the impact it can have on that individual. And just to go back to what we were talking about right at the start, there is a lot of knowledge out there. Not all of it's correct, but a lot of knowledge that we've known for millennia that are now coming to the forefront and now be explained through the lens of science that makes it a lot more palatable for ourselves as sort of members of the scientific fraternity. It's absolutely fascinating to learn about all these different things.
It is fascinating, and it's fascinating to hear that, about how that's kind of potentially rooted in some cultural heritage around that. But you are right, we need to be careful. We need to absolutely base it on science. So if you hear the latest Hollywood celebrity saying that you always must combine green things with purple things, and you must go, then we need to take that with a great deal of skepticism. But some of the science around food combinations is really revealing. I mean, it is fascinating. And we can actually talk a little bit about that when we talk about the smoke point, if you like, because actually cooking with extra virgin olive oil is, I used to say that cooking with extra virgin olive oil was safe. Now I say it's desirable, which is a distinction, I because actually there is some alchemy that goes on, which we're just getting a whiff of in terms of the science. There's some real alchemy that goes on in terms of the interactions between foods when we cook them, and some positive benefits of when you cook with extra virgin olive oil.
Well, let's talk about that. I think we've sort of teased the listener enough about the smoking point. So smoking points of olive oil and whether it's safe to cook with olive oil, particularly extra virgin olive oil. Let's discuss that. What is your opinion on that?
Okay, so first of all, I'd like us to pretend for a moment that the smoking point is relevant. Okay. And then we can discuss why it's not relevant. But let's pretend for a moment that the smoking point is relevant. So when people say to me, can you cook with extra virgin olive oil? My first answer is, well, you must be able to, because what else do they do in the Mediterranean? So in other words, the Mediterranean diet could not possibly work as a healthy diet if it was unsafe to cook with extra virgin olive oil. Can you imagine if I got off my cruise ship, when we're all traveling again, if I got off my cruise ship and I got off at the little island of Ikaria in Greece, and I climbed up the hill and I sat next to the great granddad, the shepherd, with his crook, sitting on the bench at the top of the hill. I'm out of breath by this stage, of course. Can you imagine if I went to him and I said, well, of course, you know, I cook with coconut oil because of the smoking point. He would laugh me all the way down the hill, wouldn't he? Because the only thing they use is extra virgin olive oil. And there he is, you know, aged 100. If it was not safe to cook in extra virgin olive, the Mediterranean diet wouldn't work. Anyway, so the smoke point is described to be the point at which fats break down, and through oxidation, through the chemistry of heat and oxygen, into trans fats, into compounds called polar compounds, which may be carcinogenic, may cause cancer. So there is a point at which if you heat an oil, it can break down into harmful products. Now, so we ask the question, what is the smoke? If we believe that there is a single smoke point, which, as I say, there isn't, but if we were to believe that, what is, I then ask patient or people who are asking me this question, I say, okay, so what is the smoke point of an extra virgin olive oil? And they say, I don't know. So I say, okay, well, let me help you. It's about 210 degrees centigrade. So that's, for your American listeners, I can't translate it into Fahrenheit, but yeah.
Anyway, it's high.
In European or UK, it's 210 degrees centigrade for a good extra virgin olive oil. And the antioxidants in the extra virgin olive oil will protect it during the heating. So it's important to get a good extra virgin olive oil, which is rich in antioxidants, to cook with, as well as for your health. So it's a polyphenol-rich, coughing, peppery, slightly bitter oil, which you cook with. Okay, my next question to the punter is, so what temperature do you cook at? And of course, they often don't know. So I say, okay, well, let me help you with that. You generally saute at about 160 degrees. You might roast at 170 degrees centigrade, maybe 180 degrees. If you're going for a deep fat fry, if you want to, it's about 190 degrees. So you're not near the smoke point of a good extra virgin olive oil. Anyway, if you hit this supposed smoke point, you would actually know, because it produces an acrid, unpleasant, smell. And food in the oil takes the temperature down. And, you know, in general, we don't cook above smoke points. We don't want to. We don't like to. It's not nice. Our body tells us it's not a good thing to do. So don't worry about the smoke point. You'd recognize it if it exists. And you don't cook at temperatures anywhere near it anyway. So then we can then talk about the fact that the smoke point doesn't actually exist. There is no single point at which the oil suddenly breaks down. The question is, if you heat, a more sensible question is, if you heat an oil at normal cooking temperatures, what breakdown products will you have after a period of time? And there was a study done in 2018, published in the journal Acta Scientifica, which lined up extra virgin olive oil with all the other common cooking oils, took them up to 220 degrees centigrade, as it happens briefly, and then brought them down to 180 degrees centigrade and left them for 6 hours, and then measured these polar compounds and trans fats afterwards, and found that they were actually lowest in the extra virgin olive oil. They were higher in canola oil or rapeseed oil. They were higher in sunflower oil, which is not surprising because that has a low point of change. So, and they were healthiest in the extra virgin olive oil. And the antioxidants retained in the oil at the end were highest in the extra virgin olive oil by a mile, because extra virgin olive oil is by far and away the highest antioxidant oil you can buy, because seeds in general don't need high levels of antioxidants because they are inert and they don't need to exist in this dynamic relationship with the environment that the olive fruit needs to. So it was rich in antioxidants at the end of the cooking. There were very few breakdown products, and clearly it had been safe to cook with it. And so that's been shown and published. So that's the conversation about the cooking. But not only is it safe, but as I say, it's desirable because of some of this chemical alchemy, which I call it, that goes on when you cook with extra virgin olive oil.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm so glad you've told that whole story, because I think anyone who asked me about this question again, I'm just going to ask them to go to this point in time during this podcast and listen for about 5 minutes. So everyone's got it clear that a very good quality extra virgin olive oil is completely safe and in fact desirable to cook with. The alchemy that goes on, I think, is incredible in its end. It sounds very, very interesting and warrants future study. When it comes to choosing a good quality extra virgin olive oil, bar the cough test, and I can't imagine many supermarkets or stores would be very happy about me opening every one of the bottles and then drawing the little snifters of them and measuring or counting the number of times I cough. But what kind of things should people be looking for in terms of a good quality extra virgin olive oil that obviously will cost more than your average cooking oil?
Yeah, okay. So extra virgin olive oil itself is distinct from olive oil or light olive oil. These are refined products. So in other words, when they have the pressing of the olive juice and the product at the end doesn't meet the strict standards for extra virginity, which is about purity, which is about sensory taste, but also a chemical test, which has to be undertaken for each of the producers. When it doesn't pass that, they ship it off to an industrial refinery, pump it full of hexane, heat it up, strip it of all its antioxidants, make it into a tasteless, odorless liquid, and then they put about 5 or 10% extra virgin olive oil to give it a bit of a taste, and they call it olive oil. So olive oil is a refined industrial product, which I would not recommend. Always go for extra virgin olive oil is the first key, because that's the one with these powerful antioxidant and anti-inflammatory elements in it. Most producers are incredibly proud these days of their producers, and it takes, believe me, I have been under the Tunisian sun hand harvesting an olive tree this time last year, and I was teased so much about how slow I was, and how I after 2 hours of what I thought was really, really hard work, I was told off by the women of the village for my weakness and my lack of fortitude. It takes a lot to produce a really good extra virgin olive oil. You've got to harvest it. You've got to take it to the mill. You've got to press it really quickly, and producers are proud. So the closest you can get, I mean, like any food, really, the closest you can get to, the closer you can get to the producer in terms of how it feels when you look at the bottle, when you look at where it comes from, the closer you can get, the more likely you are to get a really high quality product. So if you go and look for an extra virgin olive oil, go for one which is, first of all, at least regional. So don't go for a product of many countries. Go for one which is Greek or Spanish or Tunisian or Turkish. Go for one which comes from a particular country. If there is a family producer behind it, and you can see that it's a, that it's produced by and it's got some. I mean, clearly, you know, like everybody else in this world, extra virgin olive oil producers are good at marketing. But you will see, so you'll see some good marketing. But actually, if you can really get a sense that this is produced in a small area by small producers, a cooperative perhaps, or even just by one producer, then you'll know that you're going to get a really good quality product before you taste it. Then when you taste it, just introduce yourself to the idea that it can be a little bit like wine. Now, we could get a little bit, am I allowed to say arsey on...
Yeah, go for it.
On the podcast. Okay, we could get a little bit arsey about this, and we could kind of get a little bit a little bit like wine buffs, you know. And for me, it's a beautiful food, and so I don't necessarily want to go down that line. But if you smell it, if it's like fresh cut grass, if it's got some herbaceous tones, I mean, we could go on. We could talk about almond notes, and we could talk about ripe banana. Oh no. No, not ripe banana. Sorry. No. No, non-ripe. But green banana. Oh, yes.
Green banana.
We can argue about
whether
it's green banana. So this is what we get to with tasting. But also go for a little bit of bitterness, which when you taste it on its own, it can be quite forceful, bitterness and pungency, that pepperiness and that cough. When you put it on your food, it won't give you that same bitterness and pungency. It will modify and it will be really beautiful, I promise you. But you can taste that, and those are the polyphenols. So I would taste those. And in terms of what you spend, I mean, again, you know, it's about choice, really, isn't it? Because I have conversations with people, and I say, well, okay, so this is usually after the smoke point conversation. So they're not very happy with me by this stage. So I say, okay, so when you, they say, oh, it's expensive, and I say, okay, so. When you go to the supermarket, you know, what you buy on a weekly basis and what you buy on a monthly basis, and it turns out that people think of olive oil as being a monthly purchase, and they think that a 500ml bottle should get them through a month, but they think a 750ml bottle of Shiraz should probably get them through a night. You know, and that Australian wine, which costs, you know, £7, is for tonight. But the olive oil, it has to last me a month. Now, you know, and actually, when people were shown in a study in New York, people who really really had food poverty issues, when people were given a budget and actually told how to cook, and you know, I'm sure that you're aware of this, Rupi, in terms of your kitchen, in terms of the work that you do, when people are helped and understood about food literacy, about cooking literacy, about cooking with food, actually it's cheaper to have a Mediterranean diet than it is to have a processed, a standard American diet. But you've got to get your head around the fact that in order to benefit from the Mediterranean diet, the research shows that people are consuming between 30 and 50 mils each of extra virgin olive oil per day. So that means that we're getting through quite a lot of extra virgin olive oil. So my final piece of advice is, if people can go online and get a big can, 3 liters, 5 liters, something like that, of a good regional oil, you know, that comes with some good reviews, then get that for the kitchen, use it every day, and then if you want to buy a really special, you get into this testing malarkey, and you want to really become a connoisseur, you can have a nice special one to drizzle on afterwards. But you know, it, for me, it's key to get 3 liter or 5 liter cans into people's pantries, into people's larders, into people's kitchens, because that's where you're going to be using it for everything, and that's the way to do it economically. Because actually, you can get it for, you know, £7 sterling, you know, €8, $10 per litre of extra virgin olive oil, which when you think about what that's doing for your health, actually, it for me, it's a really important thing. And so, and I think it's really important that the Mediterranean diet is not just a preserve of the middle classes. And I'm really passionate about that, that we don't just say, oh, well, you know, I'm going to go to my middle-class supermarket and buy my middle. You know, I think it's really important that everybody can get access to this. And so although extra virgin olive oil is more expensive than vegetable oils, I think it's about, you know, helping people to understand the priorities and what they can do with it and how they can cook fresh, fresh produce in a way that makes it economical, which the science supports can be done.
Yeah, I'm really glad you mentioned all that, Simon, because one of the things that we teach in culinary medicine at UCL in Bristol is food insecurity and the magnitude of the issue in this country, let alone other countries. And the other thing that I've just been working on is a BBC food series that's going to be on iPlayer in January 2021 called Thrifty Cooking in the Doctor's Kitchen, where we're actually teaching the principles of essentially a Mediterranean diet with good quality fresh vegetables. And we've actually got the price of each portion of food down to 89p, I believe that was the final amount. So it is doable, but it is to do with food literacy and food education and being thrifty with where you get your ingredients from and where you invest as well. And that, and I think, you know, after today's conversation, I think everyone's going to be running to the top shelves of the oil departments and whatever their supermarkets are, going for those good quality extra virgin olive oils. And I'm glad you mentioned about the range of different olive oils out there and the degree of processing. Right at the start, you mentioned early harvest, I believe, the extraction method, cold pressing or mechanical extraction. Are those the kind of key messages that you'd want to look for on the bottle, as well as the single family estate or the number of different types of oil that are used in the product?
Yeah, so on the label, I mean, it's quite interesting because extra virgin definitely means something because there are standards set for that. And although there was a lot of publicity a few years ago about the possibility of fake extra virgin olive oil being around, actually, it's been shown that that's not really a problem in most Western countries these days. Most extra virgin olive oil you see will be reliably extra virgin. So extra virgin is really important. Cold pressed is quite interesting because, and first pressed, because those are now really pretty much mechanical, pretty much marketing phrases.
Ah.
So by definition, in order to get extra virgin oil, you have to press it less than 24 degrees centigrade. I think the law may be 27, but the press will do it inevitably. Modern presses do it at that temperature. So it's always cold pressed and it's always first pressed. To get extra virgin olive oil. These date back to the time where you used to run the oil through the first time, and then you used to take what was left from that and then run it through a second time to get your much lesser grade non-extra virgin oils. And then they might be described as virgin oils if they were lower grade. So extra virgin olive oil has to be the criteria are based on its taste. So you have sensory panels, and so you have these all over the Mediterranean. You have panels of experts who are testing olive oils. And one of the most bizarre memories I have is, in order to counter fraud in Calabria in southern Italy, I was once introduced to a tasting session, and I went into the tasting, and they were policemen. All testing, and they had a brigade of Italian police in Calabria, all in uniform and doing this kind of tasting with these blue glasses and sniffing and I was kind of really taken aback. But so there's a tasting thing which is heavily regulated, and then there's also an acidity level. So the end product has to be less than 0.8% acidity, and the reason for that definition is, again, based on science, and again, it's based on the antioxidant levels, because the olive oil is mostly a healthy fat, which we haven't talked about much, but that's because polyphenols are more interesting. But it has its fats in triglycerides. So what these are is these are three fatty acids which are bound together by a glycerol molecule, and that's how the fat exists. But if it's broken down by oxygen, heat and light and reactions, these fatty acids will break off and will become free fatty acids, and they will increase the acidity of the oil. So you want a low acidity oil, which reflects the fact that it's well preserved and it hasn't been oxidized, and all of the antioxidants will be preserved because they haven't been working hard to fight this oxidation. So 0.8%, and most extra virgin olive oils these days are 0.2 or 0.3%. So the acidity level, its extra virginity, and you know, regional or perhaps cooperative, or indeed even from a single grower. If you buy your can for the economy for your kitchen, you're more likely to get a cooperative. But cooperatives are really good these days in Spain and in Greece in particular, because they there's competition amongst the farmers to get the best olives, and so the cooperative will go around, the committee will go around the olive groves, looking at the oil and looking at the olives rather, and examining them and tasting them, and saying, yes, I think you're going to be the premium oil, you're going to be our bottled oil, you know, our 250 ml, our 500 ml premium top of the shelf. And then the rest, which will be still really good quality, and it's still, as I say, first pressed, because that's by definition they are, you know, will go in a larger can, and that'll be slightly less expensive. And that's the one that you probably will be able to afford to put in your kitchen. And, you know, and very, very good, very fine extra virgin olive oil. So that would be my advice in general about buying, really.
That's fascinating, and I've learned so much just from the knowledge about those marketing terms. Storing your oil, this is quite important, because I remember at the start you were talking about heat extraction methods, light and oxygen exposure. Once you've got your can, or let's say you've got a bottle, where should you keep the oil, what temperature, and how fastidious should you be about leaving the cap on as much as possible when cooking with it?
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Rupi. So fresh oil is best. I mean, it has a long shelf life because it is a very stable product because of these antioxidants. But you want to try and reduce any exposure to oxygen, because that will gradually use up those antioxidants as they protect the oil from breakdown and from going rancid. So just store it, as you say, with a cap on in a cool, dark place, away from excessive heat, away from UV light. And the most important key to making sure that your oil is fresh is to consume large amounts of it quickly. So don't have it hanging around. In fact, I gave a present of a really beautiful bottle of fresh, the first harvest. It was given to me, and I gave one bottle to a friend of mine, and I went round for dinner a few months later, and it still got it on their shelf proudly. Said, "Look, I've still got your extra virgin olive oil," and I said, "Why? Why have you still got my extra virgin olive oil? You should have consumed that within a week." So buy it in a supply that essentially can you can use in a timely way and get it through. Mm-hmm. But bear in mind that if there's really no sense, both in terms of calories or in terms of anything else, that there's no sense that you can overconsume extra virgin olive oil. Mm-hmm. I mean, 30 to 50 mils is quite a lot of oil, and that's what is part of the studies. I mean, in Greece, they consume 70 mils of extra virgin olive oil a day. Wow. Each. And so that actually equates to about a litre per person per month on the 30 to 50 mils middle range. So that's the Mediterranean diet, and the science behind the benefits of the Mediterranean diet is pitched at 30 to 50 mils in most studies, which suggests that we can certainly consume a litre each. So if you've got a family, of three or four, then 3 litres, 5 litres is perfect. Should last 6 weeks, 8 weeks, something like that. So it certainly won't go off over that time frame.
Brilliant. Well, I'm rushing to go get some more extra virgin olive oil. This conversation has made me really hungry. I actually was sent some oil by my sister's best friend's family. They're based in Turkey, and they've just started their own olive oil. And I was actually saving this bottle for you, in anticipation of you coming to the kitchen and me cooking for you. I know the family. I know the process it's gone through. So I'm going to try this a little bit later and feedback on the cough test after I've learned a lot more about it.
Yes, please do, Ruby. I'd be really interested. Turkey is one of the areas which traditionally produced a lot of extra virgin olive oil, and now they're going for some super oils from Turkey. It's great to
fantastic.
See.
Fantastic. Well, I'm going to get them to send you a bottle of this. But Simon, you should really be starting your own olive brand. I would definitely buy your oil would be a staple in my household. So I think you should seriously consider that if you haven't already.
Well, you're very kind, actually, Ruby. But in fact, what really delights me, what I really get a huge amount of pleasure about is actually the privilege of meeting so many different farmers and producers and so many different people. And so I actually like being an independent observer and communicator of all this. And one thing I've learned is that I know where the best extra virgin olive oil comes from now. And shall I tell you that secret?
Yeah, please.
The best extra virgin olive oil comes from whichever grove I happen to be standing in at the time, because farmers are so proud of their oil, and rightly so. And you know, it's wonderful to see all these places and see all these producers producing some very fine. So I actually don't go for my own brand because I just love being an ambassador for without conflict. Other than the very kind hospitality often I get at conferences and my visits to the Mediterranean. But I like being an independent ambassador for good quality extra virgin olive oils because it's really just the fun of promoting it and actually seeing how people enjoy it and gain such health benefits from it.
Fantastic.
But can I just tell you a little bit about the alchemy?
Please, yeah, please do.
That is really fascinating. So when we talked about the interactions with foods, which I know was something that you were really interested in as well from your experience. So when we talk about the way in which foods interact, and we're seeing that, for example, with extra virgin olive oil decreasing the glycemic load and increasing insulin sensitivity when you add it to a carbohydrate, there are other fascinating areas that we can see. So for example, when we cook red meat, in particular when we barbecue it and when we char grill it, as it turns color and as it goes brown and then finally black, which is how some people like it off the barbecue, it's thought to be producing compounds including heterocyclic amines, which are possible carcinogens. They possibly contribute to bowel cancer. So one of the reasons why red meat may be considered by the World Health Organization as a possible carcinogen, although there's some debate about that, is because of the formation of heterocyclic amines as it cooks during this what's called the Maillard process as it turns color. Quite extraordinarily, there's some really, really interesting research which shows that if you marinate meat in extra virgin olive oil, along with some other antioxidant, like a bit of red wine, bit of garlic, bit of herbs, you can reduce, when you cook, you reduce the formation of heterocyclic amines by as much as 80 to 90%. And so when we see meat being cooked, I mean, meat is consumed less often in the Mediterranean diet, but when it is cooked, and when it's cooked on the fire, it's usually almost invariably marinated in the Mediterranean culture. And, you know, is this one of the reasons why extra virgin olive oil and other ingredients protect the meat from those changes? You know, if it's cooked in a tagine in the juices of extra virgin olive oil, again, you know, that lamb will not be producing the same level of heterocyclic amines. And so that combination I find absolutely fascinating. And another again, written up in an obscure journal of food chemistry, but another fascinating story is that when we talk about the sensitivity to heat, when we fry fish, the good things about fish include the omega-3 polyunsaturated fatty acids. Now, omega-3s are not very heat stable, so polyunsaturates break down quite soon under heat. But if you cook it in extra virgin olive oil, if you wrap the higher, if you want to call a smoke point, but the higher capacity oil in terms of its tolerance of heat, wrap it around that fish, then it will form a protective glaze and protect those omega-3s from breakdown so that the resulting fish will be far more healthy having been fried in extra virgin olive oil than if it was cooked, fried in any other oil or cooked, because of the antioxidants and the higher smoke point of the oil. And we're also seeing some really interesting research which shows that when you cook with extra virgin olive oil, when you cook vegetables, you mix the polyphenols and they kind of enter a sort of chemical dance together. And the absorption in the juices, in the oil, is much greater of the, in particular, of the fat soluble vitamins as well as polyphenols. And there was a fascinating piece of research which showed that that actually even new polyphenols are created in the cooking between vegetables and extra virgin olive oil, which were not in the individual vegetables or oil themselves. So stories like that are beginning to emerge about this what I call alchemy of cooking.
Yeah.
The Mediterranean way, I think really are just really fascinating.
Absolutely, yeah. I really think we're scratching the surface of how much we know about the chemical nature of the foods and ingredients that we consume and how that changes through cooking from its raw form, but also after its digestion from the microbiota. It reminds me of these studies that were performed, I think it was in Cork University, where freeze-dried berries were consumed, and berries contain a multitude of different phytonutrients like anthocyanins and other chemicals. But a whole bunch of new metabolites were created that were measured after the digestive process through the microbiota as a result of microbial work on those original compounds. So there's so many different elements along the way, and it's very hard to sort of compute for our small brains compared to like computers that would be able to actually stratify all these different sort of patterns of new chemicals being created. And it's fascinating to see. And I think it speaks to what we've always known of eating a whole varied, diverse diet supplemented with a few extra things that are high in polyphenols is definitely the best way to go. So
I think that's right, Rupi. And we don't need to follow the science as much as the science is following those what we intuitively know. So in other words, we know that diet patterns, heritage diet, traditional diet patterns based on real food like the Mediterranean diet are really good for us. And the science is now explaining why, which is fascinating. So the science is following what we actually already know and what we're demonstrating. And so we can go to this off the shelf dietary pattern, which we know is going to give us health, and then say, okay, well, oh, it's interesting to try and understand why that's the case.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, Simon, this has been brilliant. I'm sure we could natter on again, and I would love to do this again when we can actually see each other in person and cook with some olive oils and do a bit of tasting. But I will let you go. I know you've got clinic later on, as do I actually. But I think we could, we could definitely talk for a lot longer. So I really appreciate you coming on.
It's been great fun. Thank you very much indeed, Ruby. Great to talk to you, and great for congratulations on all the work you're doing, and carry on these great messages.
Appreciate that. Appreciate that, Simon. Thanks for listening to today's podcast. You can find out all about Dr. Simon Paul's work on the doctorskitchen.com/podcast show notes, and I will see you here next time.
Small details are big surfaces, tight corners are odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns, so you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack
for free shipping and 365-day returns.